Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation is unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Welcome to Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, March the 10th. My name's Christy Matthews.
My name is Linda Kent.
Lauren Hoddle.
All right.
Nice to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Elizabeth, this is way on assignment this week, and we welcome her back when she arrives. And
hopefully she's listening.
She said she was traveling. We're broadcasting live from the studios at KCNR in Redding, California, on both 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. And you can also stream us online at kcnr1460.com to catch today's show and access our archive. Follow us on Telegram at X for updates at Tokens Radio Show. Our talented producer is in the booth, and Christina, how
good
you
afternoon.
Doing?
Good afternoon.
Oh, it's good to have you. Always good to see you, my dear.
Thank
She's always
you.
So
me
happy.
Too.
She is always.
I just like to work. I feel more comfortable at work.
Yeah.
How old are you?
27.
Just wait.
Well, when you say you like to just work, you know, you should say, or we'd like to hear you say, just like to work on Tokens Radio Show.
Yeah, there you go. And actually, there's a lot of questions what I would like to hear about the Bitcoin, because there's something going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That I heard for last week, that even my Ukrainian mind was kind of disappointed.
Oh.
So I'm really interested in this show, and I was excited about this.
Excellent.
Super.
Well, hopefully
nice.
You get your questions answered today. And if not, just chime in.
I will.
As always, you're always welcome to chime in.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Speaking on that note, we're going to be having Mr. Bob Burnett on the show today from Barefoot Mining. And before we bring him out, though, here's a first quick market update. Currently, currently Bitcoin's at $69,425. It has crossed over $70,000 a couple of times in the last couple of days.
Yay.
That is amazing. It is
it's starting
its trajectory up. IBIT, which is the BlackRock ETF, is at 39.55. Ethereum's at 39.01. XRP is at 61 cents, and XLM is at 14 cents.
ETH still.
Yes.
Amazes me. Today's show is sponsored by Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators. Their carefully cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experiences with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
So if you'd like to join us in our conversation today, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at kcnr1460.com. Bob's going to be here in just a moment, but oh my gosh, speaking about the upswing on Bitcoin, isn't that just amazing?
Yeah, it's great. I'll just touch on the ETFs real quick.
Okay.
That would be great.
I'm a huge fan of what they're doing for Bitcoin, which is actually bringing a lot of relevance to Bitcoin. You know, the TradFi, the traditional financial system, mm-hmm. was extremely skeptical. Now, just this week, I was talking last time I was on the show about how much Bitcoin was in the GBTC fund. Now, the other ETFs combined have more Bitcoin than GBTC, and now the IBIT has more Bitcoin than MicroStrategy as of this week.
Wow.
So things are shifting around quite a bit in that whole industry, and the demand keeps surging. So we'll just wait and see what happens. Get your popcorn.
Yeah, there's more demand than there is supply.
Yeah, while you're on that, do you think, since we have the ETFs, that people are maybe getting more interested in Bitcoin because there is ETFs?
Oh, undoubtedly. I think one of the big drawbacks and hang-ups was the uncertainty that there was no government support and perhaps government could come in and crack down or regulate. And also a secondary thing was that it was difficult to get into Bitcoin. So, you know, people didn't want to go through all these crazy steps and start their own wallet and get things rolling. So this is much easier where they can just go buy an ETF now on their, you know, their regular app where they do their stock trading and whatnot. So it's made it a lot easier. So definitely.
All right. I think we have our guests on the line.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're lucky enough to have Bob Burnett, a tech industry veteran of over 35 years. His experience includes 13 years as CTO of the Gateway Computer Company. I'm sure you guys remember those boxes that were had the cow print on them.
yep.
That was during the fierce PC battles starting in the 80s all the way through, I think. Gateway probably peaked at about 2000. He's also the CEO and founder of Barefoot Mining. Bob brings a unique perspective on the needs of mid-tier Bitcoin miners in the face of increasing concentration of mining giants like Riot and Marathon. He maintains healthy ecosystem of mid-sized players is crucial for Bitcoin's long-term decentralization and security. Bob is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, with a degree in computer science and is a passionate evangelist for Bitcoin's importance to the world's future, bringing unique insights on mining diversity and scalability. Bob, welcome to the Tokens Radio Show.
Welcome, Bob. Yes, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Great to
Bob,
have you.
Before we even start, I just wanted to throw out there, it was super wonderful to meet you and your amazing wife at the last Pacific Bitcoin. It was my pleasure to spend so much time being able to speak with you a lot and get to know you.
Well, I'm so glad that I've had that chance as well. And Lola, a.k.a. Mother Satoshi, appreciate that as well.
That's right. Yeah, that was her walking around dressed up, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah,
she was Mother Satoshi. Yes. So.
Okay.
Yeah, the ladies were down there, too, so I'm not sure if you guys remember Bob's wife walking around.
Yes. I do remember, I didn't put the two and two together on that one, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, Bob, I'll kick things off. This is probably a little bit different than your traditional audience that you've been speaking with normally, because we have a lot of people that may be driving through our county or out, you know, in their pasture, feeding the cows or whatever they're doing, listening in, not knowing a lot about Bitcoin and for sure Bitcoin mining. So maybe we'll just start off pretty basic and give us maybe just the easy version in your eyes of what Bitcoin is and maybe what exactly Bitcoin mining is. We'll just start there.
Well, I think for those of you who are very new to Bitcoin, there's a lot of misnomers about what it is. And to me, it was developed for two fundamental reasons. The first is a belief that states, meaning nation states, should not be in charge of money, that the world would be a much better place with money controlled by an independent, transparent mechanism. And so Bitcoin solves that. And the second is to create a peer-to-peer form of money that allowed two people to do any transaction anywhere in the world without the approval of an intermediary or a third party. So it's obviously a much deeper and broader topic than just those things, but I think for somebody new, those things are paramount to it.
For sure.
And I often think sometimes the importance of it is best seen by looking at it through the eyes of somebody in a less privileged portion of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we just talked about my wife. My wife was born and raised in the Philippines, and when you come from a country like that, or in modern times, I think you can look at what's gone on in Argentina and Turkey and Lebanon and places like that where money has been radically manipulated, where you can't trust the banks, where it's very difficult for the citizens of those countries to participate in a global market, Bitcoin breaks all those barriers down and allows them this wonderful tool upon which they can participate in a global marketplace where they don't have to trust in somebody else, right?
Yeah, so, for sure. That's one of the themes, probably the number one theme of this show, especially since I've been involved with it, seems to be freedom. Wouldn't you say, ladies?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's what you're describing sounds like freedom tech, a tool for humanity. And that's amazing because, like you mentioned, it really impacts humanity on all levels in all countries. So I think that's a wonderful explanation of Bitcoin because I think we can go really deep on it. But then maybe next, the whole Bitcoin mining, because I know a lot of people are super confused about it. Even people that have invested in Bitcoin aren't really familiar with it. So maybe
don't
you
understand
can,
it.
Yeah, don't really know what it's all about. So maybe you could give us the basic 101 on Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, and I certainly understand why it's one of the harder things to wrap your head around. But
for sure.
Part of it comes back to, you know, so given that we have this freedom money and given that we need to be able to move money around the world without a third party approving that transaction, there has to be a mechanism by which that can take place. And from a technical standpoint, and I entered this world from a technical perspective, the innovation of Satoshi Nakamoto in Bitcoin was to use a process called proof of work that would force any new transaction to have an associated amount of work that that went with it. That a lot of the roots of it came from preventing spam. Everybody's had spam emails, right? You have spam phone calls. And the proof of work mechanism says, well, you can't just frivolously throw transactions onto the network. You have to associate that transaction and have it validated by what's called a proof of work.
Mm-hmm.
The mining mechanism is the way in which that occurs. So at the very highest level, the mining mechanism is the manner in which transactions get approved. It's also the mechanism by which new money enters the money supply. So when Satoshi created Bitcoin, unlike anything else out there, there are tens of thousands of cryptocurrencies, basically all of them, the creator of that coin issued themselves a bunch of the coins as the creator. Satoshi didn't do that. Satoshi didn't give himself anything. He actually was the first miner. Not only did he create Bitcoin, but he was the first miner. And he actually didn't mine the first piece of Bitcoin until there was at least a second miner in the world. And they had to compete to mine what's called a block, which was so what happens is every 10 minutes, all of the transactions in the world are pending I should probably back up. I'm probably getting a little too detailed here for folks. I apologize. Maybe you guys can direct me.
I'm confused. First. But and I know what how the process works. But no, I'm just kidding. You're doing a great job. But yeah, I think you probably wanted to back up to the mempool, right, where all the transactions go.
Yeah. And I don't want to drag your
sure.
Down
well, why don't we just sum up what you said? It sounds like you're basically just saying mining is the mechanism by which new bitcoins are created and by which the transactions actually take place. So when you do want to send this freedom money, like you said, to from you to, let's say, your wife's family in the Philippines, these are the methods of which that transaction takes place. So that's basically what I'm hearing you say in a nutshell.
Well,
am I? Okay. And then
and then also it's a proof of work.
Right. Yeah.
It's important for us to throw in on.
Right.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but
no, you're good.
Proof of work there because we all know, if not all, the other cryptocurrencies are proof of work.
Right. Yeah,
puts them in a different category.
For sure. It's a way to secure the network also. But, I mean, we could go much deeper. We're just trying to give the 101 mining version to the audience. And I think we've pretty much done it. And I've been bull guarding the microphone, so I'm going to go ahead and let the ladies ask you some questions, too. How's that sound, Bob?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Bob, thank you so much for being here. This is Christy. Got a question. You are the CEO and founder of Barefoot Mining. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your company and what it is that you do? You have a kind of a different, I'm not going to say take, but method of operation maybe than some of the larger mining operations out there like Marathon. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead with that?
Sure. Yeah, my perspective on this and my takes are maybe sometimes called controversial because I do look at it very differently. if we look at mining, I like to divide the world into kind of three sizes of mining. So if, let's say, the group of us on this call right now decided we were going to start a new company. We could decide, hey, let's just pool our money and have a couple machines. We'll throw them in Lauren's garage. Okay.
Sounds good.
I would call that a rabbit-sized mining operation. They're very small. There are thousands, tens of thousands of them all over the world. Individually, they aren't very powerful, but collectively, they can be very powerful. On the other side of the spectrum, we have companies just like the ones you've mentioned, Marathon, Riot. They build these big, powerful sites. They take a very long time to put together. They're usually built in fixed locations, connected to the grid. They're very visible. And part of the reason I call them elephants is because they're big and powerful, but they're also easy to identify and easy to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So now the rabbits, on the other hand, right? They're if you went out and tried to hunt mining operations, if you were hunting elephants, it would be pretty easy. You'd know right where they were, and I'd say you could attack them. Although you can attack them through things like regulation and taxation, you can also attack them. And I predict this is probably a deeper conversation, but I predict we'll enter an era where we'll see eco-terrorism become common.
Mm-hmm.
You can attack them. Yeah. You can attack them that way. But it's very hard to hunt the rabbits that way because the rabbits, the moment you start hunting them, one, they're hard to find.
Yeah.
But two, they're going to scatter and you'll never get them.
They're mobile.
Now, in the middle ground are what I call the horses. The horses are small to medium-sized commercial operations. This is what we specialize in. They're built mobile. Like, we build them in containers that can be picked up and moved literally in a matter of a couple days. We can build them very quickly. A lot of our operations, in the last year, we've put up several new sites in the last year. Some of them we've gone have gone up in like the space of 6 weeks, where we would go from identifying the site, raising the money, bringing the technology and getting it assembled and getting operating in like 6 weeks. The elephants, by the way, it would be a 15 to 18 month process to bring something like that up. So, but the horses share the characteristics like the rabbits, that they're hard to hunt.
Yeah.
Because you may be able to identify them, certainly easier than the rabbit, but they can scatter, right? In fact, we can camouflage them. And to give you an example of a rabbit or a horse class site, we put one up in South Dakota about a year ago, where we found a 2-megawatt site that was in an industrial complex. And what had happened was a company had been in a big warehouse, had a lot of refrigeration in it, and they left.
Hmm.
So the landlord rented that space back out to a company producing burritos. Now the burrito company, didn't have nearly the same electrical needs as the company doing food storage had. So they ended up having a lot of excess power at this site. So what we did was we went to the landlord and said, hey, can we drop a couple containers in the backside of your burrito factory? No one will even know they're there. They blend in with the burrito factory. And that's exactly what we did. So in that particular case, we have 2 megawatts of power, which, by the way, is about 600 servers running in these containers. And they sit there in a very, it would be very, very difficult to find them. So anyway, those are the horses. So we do it in part because I do believe that over time the network will be attacked. At least we have to that it will be.
I agree.
Yeah. I think that's the way, I look at it is, you know, my background in technology and as a system designer says, well, hey, we are building something that threatens the very power and wealth structure of the world.
Yeah.
It would be a very poor assumption to assume that they're just going to lay down and let us do this.
For sure.
Without a fight.
Yeah. So, I've been reading the faces of my co-hosts here, and it sounds like maybe the next question on all of our minds, and it sounds like it's really important, is jurisdiction. So I'm sure this is right, lady?
Yeah.
I mean, huge role in all of this. Your thoughts on jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, it's step one of we have a little flow chart that we use internally in deciding where we are going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think it starts with, well, where can you get really cheap energy?
Right.
But it actually doesn't.
Oh.
It starts with jurisdictional risk.
Oh, wow.
So, and no offense to anybody in your room there.
Good
or
old California.
Audience, but California is not
number one on the list.
Very high on our list.
No.
We view it as a very high jurisdictional risk.
For sure.
Location, as we would with New York, Massachusetts.
Oregon, Washington.
Oregon, Washington, right. And it's a shame because there are some really advantageous energy situations in a lot of those places.
Yep.
You know, Washington State, for instance, Eastern Washington has, you know, and
Columbia River Basin.
Again, for those people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we're looking for is, like I just saw this stat earlier today, the average cost of energy in the United States is 12.4 cents per kilowatt hour.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Now, I think if you look at all the commercial grade mining companies, I would say the horses and the elephant class mining, you'll typically see that we pay less than 5 cents per kilowatt hour.
Mm.
That's going to be at the raw cost of energy. So anytime somebody identifies that kind of opportunity, it's interesting. But it's not interesting if the community in which you would be going to doesn't want it there, first
mm-hmm.
of all.
Right.
I've said before, like, I don't want my employees or my partners or anybody that's associated with me to not be wanted by the community in which they're in.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
Secondly, when you look at the local governments and the state governments, are they friendly? Will they protect us? Because I think a lot of things that are going to happen with mining will, like where the, I think we're, the tech will, I think, come at a federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Warren's of the world, for instance,
yep.
have been very unkind to us as an industry. And as they come to attack us, I think there are going to be a lot of issues with states' rights. Like, hey, the states that are willing to stand up and protect the industry, we have a chance. And, you know, states like Texas and California, or Texas and South Dakota and Oklahoma, Georgia, they've all been pretty
good old Pocahontas.
Pretty supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, I think we're going to take a break right
there.
We're getting
the signal from the producer.
I think that would be a good time to take a break, and then we can pick up this conversation on the other side. If you'll hang with us, that would be wonderful.
Of course.
You are listening to Tokens Radio Show on KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Let me get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink a bowl up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink a bowl up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink a bowl up. Put the lime in the coconut, you call the doctor. Woke him up, say, doctor, is there nothing I can take? I say, doctor, to relieve this baby, you got to say, doctor, is there nothing I can take? I say, doctor.
Experience luxurious bliss with Pinnacle Cultivators, Redding's premier licensed legacy cultivator exclusively at the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake. Pinnacle's carefully crafted, expertly curated flower guarantees an exceptional experience with rare genetics and distinctive flavors, freshly packaged daily for a genuine farm-to-table experience. Visit 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-276-9771 for delivery and hours of operation. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragon.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Destruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity and reliability of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Maintain your car warranty with our service while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Stop into a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit us in Palisadro, in the Holiday Shopping Center, or in Redding, on Lake Boulevard, near Waterworks Park, and Anderson, across from Roundtable Pizza. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Marjorie Joyner, your host, here with the latest local updates. Our first story focuses on altered voter registrations in Shasta County. A lifelong Republican voter received a ballot without presidential primary choices. At the registrar of voters, they couldn't re-register as Republican due to system issues and had to register as a Democrat to get a Republican ballot. Another resident reported 4 out of 5 adults at their address receive nonpartisan ballots without presidential choices. This raises serious questions about Shasta County's voting process integrity. How are changes occurring without voters' knowledge? Why are many receiving ballots not reflecting their party? Multiple reports have been filed, but what action will be taken? Stay informed, verify your registration, and ensure your voice is heard. Moving on from our last story, Super Tuesday brought super news for Carlos Zapata and Jesse Lane in a restraining order hearing against Stephen King. Judge Stephen H. Baker dismissed King's request for restraining orders against Zapata and Lane, citing insufficient evidence. However, the judge granted Lane a 3-year restraining order against King. The hearing revealed damning evidence of King's expletive-laced emails and videos of him harassing Lane and Zapata. King, who represented himself, bounced around with unrelated details and failed to present compelling evidence. In a statement, King acknowledged the outcome, wished Zapata and Lane the best, and declared his intention to focus on his own life and retirement. Justice was indeed served in this dramatic courtroom showdown. Next up, in the city of Shasta Lake, a beacon of hope for homeless veterans flickers amidst challenges. The Shasta Lake Veteran Village, an $11.2 million project to house low-income, disabled veterans, faces delays and funding gaps. Despite setbacks, Chris Johnson, CEO of Nation's Finest, remains optimistic, urging community support for this vital endeavor. Meanwhile, affordable housing remains crucial for improving veterans' lives in Shasta County. The 3-story, 30-unit complex will provide a safe haven for those who sacrificed for our country. As we await bond funding approval, let us unite to ensure our veterans receive the care and support they deserve. The Shasta Lake Veterans Village represents more than just a building. It's a testament to our commitment to those who served. In our final brief, we now turn our attention to a remarkable display of community support in Reading. The Rice Brothers Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Gym held their Roll for a Cause fundraiser on Saturday, March 2nd, to support the Jorgensen and Moore families who tragically lost their children in the recent landslide near Shasta Dam. The event was a tremendous success with over 100 people in attendance and an astonishing $30,000 raised. Co-owner Tanner Rice expressed his gratitude for the overwhelming support from the local businesses and the community, saying, "We just hope to give them as much money as possible." The event featured food from various local eateries, a silent auction with exciting prizes, and a poignant moment of silence led by Rice to honor the families. This touching display of unity and compassion showcases the strength of the Reading community in times of adversity. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Become part of the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X, formerly Twitter.
Well, we're big rock singers. We got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go.
Sounds like us.
We sing about beauty, and we sing about truth. At $10,000 a show,
but right.
We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we never know. It's the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture?
Great choice.
Thank you. And before the break, we were talking with Bob with Barefoot Mining.
Love you, Bob.
And we're talking about Bitcoin mining and a lot of different things in regards to that. If you want to call in and have a question, give us a call, 530-605-4567. So let's go ahead and continue the conversation. I think during the break we kind of were going back and forth with one another, and I think one of the questions was that we came up with was, what effect is halving going to have on the mining operations or in your company?
Well, the good news is we've known it's been coming for a long time, so it's given us plenty of time to prepare. It's one of the beauties, I think, of Bitcoin.
Hey, Bob, can I stop you first?
Yes.
Because I think for our audience, maybe just give a little bit of a definition of the halving. Because we have a lot of people that really are still asking us these kinds of questions.
True. So I backed up.
Apologize, yeah. To, you know, for jumping in there, but
sure.
Let's set the stage first with just what is the halving.
Okay. Well, another piece of genius in the way that Satoshi Nakamoto developed Bitcoin and designed Bitcoin was that I mentioned before he didn't issue any coins to himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now he earned a lot of them through mining, but in Bitcoin every 10 minutes on approximately a new block is created, and as a reward to the miners for processing that block, they get two things. They get, one is called the subsidy and the second is called fees, and the subsidy is the issuance of new Bitcoin. It's how new Bitcoin comes into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in 2009, at the inception of Bitcoin, every block had 50 Bitcoin as the subsidy. The fees, by the way, you could think of them as a tip or a bribe for individual people trying to get a transaction through to try to move their transaction to the top of the queue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not required. Well, actually, it's a little bit, but it essentially can be free if you wish, but you may wait a very, very long time. In the future, it may wait forever.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, for the first 210,000 blocks, which takes just under 4 years to get through, 50 Bitcoin were given to the miners with every block at the new issuance. And then for the next 210,000 blocks, 25 were. The next 12.5 were.
Mm-hmm.
We are now in what's called, and each of those 210,000 block sections are called epochs.
Mm-hmm.
And a And as you enter one epoch from the previous, the subsidy halves, hence the term halving.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at the point now, if you do the math, it's fairly simple to do. If you did 210,000 blocks times 50, what's that, 10.5 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first 10.5 million Bitcoin entered the money supply in that first roughly four-year period.
Okay.
Which, interestingly, is half of all the Bitcoin that there will ever be
mm-hmm.
entered in the first section.
Right.
And the next section, you do that math, well, you'll find just over 5 million entered, or a quarter of it. So we're on our way to where eventually it will take till about the year 2140, all the Bitcoin has been entered into issuance, into the money supply.
Right.
We're at the point now, though, where essentially we're approaching 20 million now.
Mm.
So we're pretty close to the absolute limit already.
So there's not many Bitcoin left to actually enter circulation, period.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
What is the halving is coming up very soon, correct? And then what will the average number of Bitcoin, or we know what the number of Bitcoin mined per day will be after that halving. Do you know that number?
3.125 or 3 1/8.
3 1/8 every block, which you said was about 10 minutes?
Every 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
And just to, you know, so there's about 144 blocks per day.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 52,000 to 53,000 blocks per year. Just
okay.
To kind of, you know, you can kind of put that in perspective.
Right. Sorry, and then we can shoot over to Linda's question too, because I think you've done a pretty good job of cementing us in on the whole process of halving and whatnot.
Yeah. So, what does it mean to a company like mine?
Well,
right.
If we keep the math simple, let's just pretend that Barefoot's not 1% of the world's hash power or mining computing power. So hash power is a way of measuring what percent of the world's computing power is available, and then you can look at your individual, your company, or your personal individual percentage of that number. And mathematically, that's the expected amount of money that you can get. So in other words, if you owned 1% of the world's hash power, then as a miner, you can expect to get 1% of all that new money issuance.
Gotcha.
So, so if you measure it in Bitcoin terms, in this last epoch, the average amount of money per block has been the 6.25. So we're still in it for a handful of more weeks,
right.
Plus fees. The fees have been just under 0.45 Bitcoin recently.
Okay.
So what will happen is the 6.25 part of that will have, but the fees won't.
Okay.
Right. The fees will stay constant. But it basically means, as measured in Bitcoin terms, we will see a fall in our revenue of probably about 45%.
Oh, wow.
So
that will be.
Yeah.
How do you make that up?
Yeah. Well, you have to prepare for it well ahead of time.
Okay.
So what we did a lot of in 2023 was we replaced essentially every server in our entire company in about a 15-month period. And we put new equipment in, very high efficiency stuff. I have some pretty complex models to predict where the hash power of the world will go, how high fees will get, those sorts of things. Now, if Bitcoin, but we're still in a world where we have to pay a lot of our bills in fiat, right?
Right.
US dollars.
Yes.
So, we're prepared. So even if Bitcoin fell down, let's say, back into the $40,000 range and then the halving occurred,
mm-hmm.
we would survive. We
okay.
would definitely not be thriving,
yeah.
but we would survive.
Right.
There's a lot
if
of
you look at a lot of the big.
Yeah, I was just going to say that a lot of them wouldn't in right. in similar no. circumstances.
Right.
Correct.
That helps being a horse.
Right. Right. Yeah. And yes. Yes. Well, what's interesting is, like, I'm not a big fan of the public mining companies.
Right.
Because, and I've been public. It's not a criticism of any of these people individually. It's mm-hmm. not. I don't believe you can operate a public mining company and do it consistently within the ethos of Bitcoin, meaning doing what's best for Bitcoin.
Right.
Which indirectly means doing what I believe. This is the as a guy almost 60 years old, I believe this is, from a professional perspective,
mm-hmm.
this is my last mission in life, is to help build this network and make it secure and pass it to these future generations and make Bitcoin money for the next 1,000 years. And if we do, then we have this tremendous freedom, and I think we'll have this tremendous prosperity of civilization and mankind.
Couldn't agree more.
If we don't, I believe the likelihood is of a very dystopian sort of world,
oh,
and
gosh.
Not to be dramatic,
yeah,
but, you know,
for
that's,
sure.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, that's
so.
Yeah. Do you know if we can? That is where we're at too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really appreciated about Bob. Actually, I just wanted to sneak this in there. It was, you know, I really got the feeling that you were an authentic individual, and that you were really coming from a place where, you know, authenticity and what was in the best interest of, you know, fellow mankind was the heart of what was driving you. And I really appreciated that about you, Bob.
I think that's why we...
Well, thank you. Now, on that note,
we kind of want to take a little pivot, because that's where we're at, too. There's a couple of us here that have gone over 60.
And yes, we won't say how
and,
far over.
We are looking at having a tremendous effect here on our local economy.
I'm not sure
if you're familiar with Shasta County and how much hydro and biomass and wind energy that we have here. Two of our cities, one in particular, a smaller city, the city of Shasta Lake, does generate its own electricity using hydro, and they do mm-hmm. buy wind and they buy other sources, whereas the city of Redding generates mostly from natural gas. If our goal here, one of our goals here is not only educate the public as much as we can possibly do about this amazing technology, but what we want to do is introduce it to our county and our city that might be best suited for considering Bitcoin mining as possibly a tier two income revenue stream for the community. What are your thoughts? I know it's not your favorite jurisdiction. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, what would a community that has been focused on grant funding and basically is the way we've always done it kind of mentality, mm-hmm. not a lot of forward-looking things, at least as we living here for a long time, that's the way we see things, of bringing in some you know, bringing this idea and sharing it with our leaders who are tasked with making these long-term decisions, how do we go about introducing something like this to them just to get their attention?
Well said.
Yeah, I am familiar with your area, and I think I even alluded to this. I think that there are certain areas, I think yours is an excellent example of it, where there are places where they generate large energy surpluses relative to their population.
Right.
And may even additionally have the ability to do much more,
mm-hmm.
what we would call stranded energy, right? The additional stranded energy that's available. I think the thing you could do is if you can get really strong local support and, you know, have a dialogue with companies like mine about the you know, what we can do to maybe make sure that the state has minimal impact.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, then I think you could, do that. Now, there is so much that can be done in areas like yours. I've spoken about this publicly, but one of the things we did in South Carolina a few years ago was we identified an old textile mill. In your case, it may be an old lumber mill or something like that in your area.
There are
you often associated with those type of facilities old hydroelectric infrastructure, some that may still be working, some maybe that was left to rot. But like what we did was we found one of those facilities in South Carolina. We went in. It was an abandoned textile mill that still had what we call good bones, meaning the dam was there, the penstock, which is a pipe that moves the water from above the dam down into a powerhouse below the dam, was still there and roughly intact, and some of the turbine and that sort of thing was there. So we went in. It was an expensive project. It was a multi-million-dollar project, but we went in and we rehabilitated that whole thing. And what we do is we mine off-grid, though. So we do not take that facility and push any of the energy back to the grid. In fact, we made the decision to cut the cord. A lot of companies, when they do these things, they will often push excess energy back to the grid.
Right.
What we made the decision in this case to do was say, well, we don't want any legislative action or authority, or take an extreme example, a National Guard group pointing a gun at our head,
right?
To be able to say, redirect your energy from mining Bitcoin to push it back to the grid.
Yeah.
So we created a certain degree of independence. It's not foolproof, right? Could that line be cooked up? Could somebody force us to turn off? Yes. That's possible, but it's much different than if you're running your operation in a warehouse, or honestly, even the burrito example I gave you, like that one, we're much more exposed because somebody outside our company can make a decision to turn us off, and it could be done in a matter of seconds, right? They can they can turn us off. Versus the other way, but I like I said, we do both, right? It's not that we won't do on grid stuff too. We do plenty of on grid stuff, but we, like, for instance, most of that is in South Dakota for us, where we feel very, very safe that both the state and largely the local governments will support us and the community will support us. In your case, you might have an issue with the state, but I think you could, if you can get the community and the local government, the county government, the associated city government, if necessary, to support you, then I think you have a case and you could probably start making an appeal, probably on a small basis, to companies like mine.
So,
but that's good because you could be developing horse class sites.
Oh, that's amazing. So given the scenario you just described, if you had a small municipality that was concerned about being a competitor to themselves, so I have heard this before, to where you get a company in there who needs power and they want to redirect it back to the grid, it is a concern with the municipality that there's a competition there. It seems as though the manner in which you just described this scenario in South Carolina would not be the case.
Correct.
Oh, correct. I love that solution.
No, you could. I mean, you could. It's all. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to respect. I respect the right of people to build as they wish to build.
Sure.
And if you had a situation where in the local community maybe you didn't have a stable grid, and you wish to put something in place where part of the project was mining related, and part of it was to push it back to the grid and maybe serve as a, you know, we generally call it demand response,
right.
And you know, have the ability to shut down and redirect. I think that that's fine. You know, we would certainly do that in our on-grid operations. Obviously, if we got a call from either our utility provider or the local government that said, "Hey, we're having some instability and it's the middle of a blizzard and we're having trouble keeping people's homes heated or keeping the nursing homes from having electricity or something like that." Obviously, we're human beings first, right? We're gonna say we'll turn it off. Of course,
yeah. It's cooling in our situation because it gets hot here in the summer.
But you kind of hit upon for me a few different points. As far as we don't want the regulations coming back, if you know anything about Shasta County, you know that we are doing different things. We don't want to be reliable on the state, and we have all this different stuff. Our infrastructure is not good here at all. And so would you, like, look at it case by case? If you came in and did an analysis, like, of Shasta County, would you look at and take in all those factors of how the people feel in the community and go, okay, this is what we see as the best scenario for this to fit into your community and make it viable?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's very similar to what we would do. You know, we're looking, I don't want to say we're working, we're looking at projects in Africa, we're looking at projects in places like the Philippines. And a lot of times we come into a community there where it's very similar, maybe even in a more dramatic fashion, right?
Right, they, right.
You know, they may not have, so you could, in other words, you can come in on a cooperative basis. And I think that's one of the powers of Bitcoin is, you can say, hey, okay, let's just use an example. 2 megawatts, by the way, I mentioned that at the burrito factory.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a lot of power.
Yeah,
right?
Sure
you
is.
Could, you know, you can have several thousand people, a town of several thousand people can work very comfortably with 2 megawatts. So, you could, and, you know, what you could do is you can go into a place and say, well, you know, we're going to build out at let's say a 4 or 5 megawatt level. That's kind of, that's what I would call a big horse, right? That's kind of the Clydesdale size of the horses. But you could build something like that is partial use. And you could say, hey, we're going to have a Bitcoin mining operation that consumes 2 or 3, and we'll have 2 or 3 that's allocated to the residents or the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things about a community of people and of businesses is there's almost no regularity in their power usage. That's true on small windows, like within a day.
Mm-hmm.
And as was mentioned too, it also varies dramatic seasonally.
Yeah.
So what happens is when you have to build out power infrastructure for a community, you have to build to the peak.
Yeah.
If you want it to be serviced properly, you have to build to the peak.
Right.
Yet you rarely approach the peak.
Hmm.
So, and then if you don't use all the power all the time, it takes a long time to recover the investment.
Hmm. It sounds like
but
we're going to need to be maybe picking your brain a little bit off air even, because the two ladies I'm sitting with happen to be heavily involved with local government, and this is a plan that we're, you know, going to pursue locally. So if you don't mind and you give us access to pick your brain, we would definitely love that. I think we're getting to wrap it up here in a minute.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're running out of time on the segment for the radio. It's been wonderful.
So
you're great.
We're just sponges soaking up all your knowledge. I wanted to just give you a shout-out on the podcast you did with Fred Krueger and Lawrence Lepard. Not, you know, I was just sitting there going, man, there's this Stanford guy, a Harvard dude, and, you know, talking to you, I was like, it was quite something. So I really appreciated that podcast you did with those guys.
All right. And we want to thank you again
thank you.
And talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for having me, guys. Bye-bye.
All right.
Take care.
Great
Have
day.
A great day.
Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's the name I love to say. say, and we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day when he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.